Imagine a world in which post-traumatic stress no longer robs from the millions who suffer, where spouses, children, communities, and organizations get back the ones they love. Post-traumatic stress is often treated as an illness that can only be curbed, but this is wrong. PTS is an injury that can be healed quickly so that those affected get back to doing what they're meant to do, thrive. Join us as we discuss the latest innovation in the treatment of PTSD, specifically the reconsolidation of traumatic memories, what we refer to as the RTM protocol. We regularly feature guests who have successfully cured PTSD to inspire hope in all those who still struggle, hope in what is possible. This is Life After PTSD. You are listening to another episode of Life After PTSD. We talk about hope for people who are struggling. We are excited. This is our fourth episode, and today we have a special guest with us. Brian is here joining myself and Carrie Russo. My name is Jeff McLaughlin, and welcome to the show. So Brian, thanks for being here. It's exciting to have you. We can't wait to get to know your story. You were in the Army and got out in 2014, deployed in Afghanistan and Iraq, and that's about all I know about you right now, so we want to find out everything. So man, tell me your story and how you got in and where life took you from there.
So I joined like why most people join when they're 20 years old, because they hated college. So, and really I just thought of me going nowhere with continuing to get an education. And I think I was more ready to start being an adult than I was a student, get married, all that. So I decided the quickest route for that was joining the Army. And I joined originally as a Cav Scout back in 07 and then deployed to Iraq in 09 and 10. And then re-enlisted a reclass to medic because my Iraq deployment was an interesting one. And then so I became a medic and then deployed to Afghanistan shortly after that in 2012. My Afghanistan deployment was cut short about 4 months in. I got medevaced after having really bad migraines that caused me to black out in the gym. And it's just from the multiple concussions that I'd gotten from previous deployments and you know, all the training and everything, your head just kind of gets banged around a lot. So come to find out that I had what was called post-concussive syndrome. They don't label it as TBI, but I have post-concussive syndrome. So that's
well, you had never heard of something like that before.
Know, I thought that was what TBI was, but apparently that's the powers that be say it not. So my med board started in 2013 and I was medically discharged and retired at 2014 February.
So was that a welcome retirement at that point, or was that
one
of those?
No, I fought it kicking and screaming because I was medevaced in 2012. Yeah. So, and I was immediately sent to Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, and they were saying, hey, we think you're done. You know, your migraines are getting progressively worse, and we just think that it's time that you call it quits. And I said, no, screw that. Send me back to my unit. I think, you know, there's plenty of people walking around that have migraines. There's a pill that fixes that, right? And come to find out there was not, for me at least. They tried over 150 Botox injections in my occipital nerve.
Oh my gosh.
They did. That was over the period of like 3-4 months. A whole bunch of other therapies too as well. And I basically had a headache for a year straight, and I was having 3 to 5 migraines a week. And then come the time that it was for me to take my PT test, and it was a pass or fail for me. If I didn't pass, then they were going to start paperwork. And wow. I started my 2-mile run and started throwing up all over myself because I got a migraine. And next thing I know, I'm in the hospital. So
I can't imagine, first of all, running with migraines. I don't get my migraines. My wife does. And I've seen what that does to somebody. And that's not even related to a head injury or anything like that. And there's no way she couldn't run 200 feet if she had to with a migraine. So I can't even imagine you having to do that. For starters, absolutely crazy. So, wow. Okay.
And then I'm trying to think. So I met you then right when you came back in 2014.
Yeah,
that's when we first tried to do the first.
You met me when I was in my happy place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so explain that. So happy place, what do you mean
that? I was totally not happy. I mean,
sarcasm
is probably lost on the radio, right? It's like I said, when I failed that PT test, I enjoyed the military. I extended once and re-enlisted twice.
Okay. Well, and you were still trying to extend it at that point. You weren't on disability yet. You were still trying to
I was fighting.
Figure out a way to go back in.
My primary physician basically sat me down after I failed the PT test and was like, just so you know, I have recommended you for medical board, and you're done. And he said, I know you're going to hate me.
Wow.
He said, but whatever. He said, I started paperwork. And I was pretty upset about it. And then from there was decline in all my health. Basically for the next 8 months, like when I realized my career was over, everything else I started to think about that I had done for the past 7 years kind of just set in.
Hmm.
I really started to experience, I had experienced PTSD mm-hmm. symptoms before mm-hmm. where, you know, they gave me a couple Ambien mm-hmm. and we're like, oh, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. go and sleep it off. You'll be fine.
Yeah. And that's one thing I wanted to interrupt really quick. So that's a common theme in the military. It seems like
it's
like
a common,
you're not sleeping well. No. So instead of talking about anything that you need to talk about in therapy or working on anything, you just,
but that was while you were deployed, right? I mean, they were giving the Ambien and everything, or they were trying
that? That is a battle stress counselor technique it was an Air Force battle stress counselor.
Sure.
And they give you 10 Ambien and they say, hey, we're going to write you a script basically to no missions for the next 10 days.
Sure.
Or sometimes they'll even send you to Qatar for a 3-day. We had two guys in our platoon that got sent to Qatar because they needed a break.
Sure.
You know,
sure,
anytime that you see somebody starting to come unwound, sometimes mm-hmm. you pull them from the line.
Sure,
and
sure.
So before you even start to get to that point, their solution is dose them with Ambien or Seroquel was one that they also gave me. And, you know, just rest, decompress for the next 10 days, mm-hmm. stay in your chew, mm-hmm. watch some movies, you know, mm-hmm. go shower, eat a lot of chow. I mean, because there's only so much you can do in Iraq FOB, so because it's still like a...
It's not a tourist destination.
No, it's a 1 by mile. It's as close as you can get to a prison without maybe all the man love, I guess.
That's an interesting description.
I mean, you're on a place that you cannot leave without, you know, it's
point taken.
So and when you had that first, the first bout with PTSD, what were your first symptoms, you know, that you went to?
I would say sleep loss was mm-hmm. my first, and I didn't experience that until 6 months after I got back. It was February and I was, I had reported to medic school cause I re-enlisted, like I said, I re-enlisted to reclass while I was in Iraq.
Mm.
And so right when I got back in October of 2010, 2011 February, I was reporting to San Antonio, and about I'd say 3 weeks into the school, because I was already an EMT certified, I was mm-hmm. really just attending the classes waiting for my whiskey slot, which is what they call your combat medicine
mm-hmm.
Phase. I was waiting for that to open up so I could start actually learning combat and trauma medicine.
Mm.
And so while I'm waiting and just literally twiddling my thumbs, I noticed that I was having a hard time sleeping. I started going to the PX every night and getting a 12-pack of beer, mm-hmm. literally a drink before I went to bed.
Mm.
There was a point where me and another prior service deployed guy, we were mm-hmm. going out to his car and he had a cooler full of beers. We were going mm-hmm. out at 11 o'clock between class breaks mm. and just slamming a beer because
just medicating.
We needed it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so on edge. I was so ramped up. I thought I was going to choke these privates that I was surrounded by because they were just, you know, they were so dumb and new and they didn't know what waited for them. And like when they started to fall asleep in a class where they're supposed to be learning how to save possibly one of my friend's lives, I'd lose it.
Yeah.
So it was that's when I started to notice my anger, my sleep loss. Okay. I'm self-medicating, but I didn't identify it as that at that point.
Yeah.
And then I got called on it because I smelled like booze one morning. At a PT session, and I was basically told to either go to the doctor or they were gonna Article 15 me.
So what is Article 15?
Article 15 is where it's paperwork where they feel there's three levels. There's company, summarized, and field grade.
Sure.
Field grade is the worst, and that they could actually court martial you on a field grade Article 15. You could go before a judge and everything. Summarized is usually a slap on the wrist and you end up, you know, doing what's called extra duty, 14 days of extra duty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They can dock your paycheck half pay for 90 days. They can restrict you to uniform. They can restrict you to post. It's basically punishment.
Wow.
And if you're in school and they give you an Article 15, usually they kick you out of school. They revoke whatever contract that you just signed saying, and they send you back to your unit. And your unit is not going to be happy to have you usually because you're coming back what they would classify as a scumbag.
So, got it. Got it.
All because you're drinking to cope with things and a lot of guys do it. But so I went and saw a psychologist and mm-hmm. he said, oh, you've got PTSD. And,
now, is that the first time you actually heard those words?
And, okay. And so this was 2011, I'd say April. And he also said I had another thing I hadn't heard, adjustment disorder. And he said I was extremely depressed. He called extreme anxiety disorders. So he like hit me with like six diagnoses.
And you're
like,
thinking, I just need a beer to sleep. What are you talking about?
I saw this man for an hour. And when I left I left with six. I'm like, okay. And prescriptions.
I mean, did you leave there in a straightjacket? I mean,
no,
my gosh.
I left there thinking, like, what the heck is wrong with me is what I thought. I'm like, wow. I mean, I didn't think I said anything that bad. But after an hour of talking to this guy, he's like, oh, you're screwed up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up disregarding that because I had a job to do. Sure. And I was still in the Army. I had a contract. I was about to report to Fort Sill. And I ended up going to, I got assigned to Reynolds Army Community Hospital there. Ended up working there for in the emergency room for I think about 7-8 months.
Okay.
And I couldn't stand it anymore. I was ready to deploy. It's why I had re-enlisted to reclass. I liked working with the civilian nurses in there and the staff. I learned a lot. It was a great education, second to the medic school, but I couldn't explain this desire of like I was going crazy sitting still. I needed to go do something again. And I actually went and put myself on what's called the PROFIS list, which allows anybody, any unit in the world, wherever they're at, if they're about to deploy, to pull you as a medic because you're critical personnel and assign them to, you know, a platoon with them. The second I did that, I had the sergeant major of the hospital come down and was very upset at me and said, you know, you can't leave, you just got here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And he actually ended up getting me a deployment with a unit out of Fort Sill, and that's when I deployed to Afghanistan on what was called an SFAT team. And my job there was to actually be the medical support for these 12 guys that were training 750 Afghan soldiers. Mm-hmm. And then also I was supposed to be the medical support and health and welfare for all 750 of those Afghan soldiers.
So and were you sleeping yet at this point?
I was sleeping better because I feel like when I kick into job engage mode, it's almost like everything becomes super compartmentalized. It's when, you know, you hear that expression, when the music stops. It truly is. When everything's silent is when everything gets messed up. When we don't have a job to do, which is why when my career was basically over is when I felt everything. Like
let me stop you right there, because that actually accords very well with what Dan Jarvis was saying in a previous episode. Remember, he talked about like going back into that machine mode. Like that's what it is. I mean, you're essentially this machine. You're programmed to do a job, to have a function, to have a responsibility. And then when you're not doing that, because he had experienced that, I guess, after a deployment and then sort of re-engaging real life and then going back. Remember, was he a drill sergeant or something like that thereafter?
Right.
And then experiencing it again when he came off of the second deployment or third or whatever it was. I mean, that's
I think the next podcast, we need to have both of them together because it'd be interesting to hear their banter back and forth.
You guys can tell some stories and what that looks like. All right, so you now have a purpose again. You have the machine is reactivated.
Right.
And then what happens?
I mean, at this point, I was also on no medication, and they had only given me the Ambien and Seroquel.
Sure.
So I ended up deploying, and I'd say like 3 months in, everything was great, doing fine. Then we had like one little IED explosion. It wasn't even that big of a deal. But
I love it. He says one little IED explosion.
Well, because it wasn't that big of a deal.
It wasn't even my truck that got, you know.
Yeah.
That, so it's just, it's interesting because I just feel like my brain was basically like, I'm done.
Sure.
Whether it be from the amount of concussions or the stress that I was just bottling inside of it, it broke.
And of course, at this point, you know, you had already been over once, and he had already... you'd already seen a lot of things.
Right.
You'd already been doing a lot of stuff in the prior deployment.
And this medic deployment, I mean, right when we got there, we got there in the prime of fighting season.
Sure.
And that was something I don't think that I had fully mentally prepared myself for. I did well, but the TMC there saw, which is the troop medical clinic that was on, saw a lot of trauma.
Sure.
There was guys in these striker units with 2ID that were getting burned on a weekly basis because IEDs were hitting these vehicles and the magnesium armor would spark up and it's like a candle. I don't know who thought that one through to put magnesium in an armor, but you know, it's
that is true. Very flammable.
Yeah. So once superheat's applied, right. It sparks.
Wow.
So, guys were getting trapped inside. We were going to we were going to ceremonies almost every week there for about a month where, I mean, you'd see two or three crosses at the front. But yeah, it was, I almost think that I focused on that better because I felt better about that deployment. I was doing something good. I was mm-hmm. helping. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to even easier compartmentalize that deployment better because I just put everything into nice little neat boxes like, oh, this is a really crappy situation that I just saw, but yeah, you're covered in blood, but everyone, you know, you did something good.
Yep.
What's interesting though is just a couple weeks ago, you couldn't tell that story. You couldn't even talk about the story with the striker. Yeah, and now he's talking about it. So after RTM, which is kind of interesting.
So cool. Yeah, so we're gonna find out what. So walk us. Let's fast forward just a little bit.
Yeah.
And to the point where we, what was a breaking point for you in terms of either treatment or, you know, things that didn't work? How did the alcoholism, if I can call it that?
Yeah. Well, you can probably call it that.
Did that progress? I mean, tell me where things continued from there.
I'd say
when you hit March, that IED and you said your brain just, you kind of said, when I interrupted, well, you said your brain just sort of said, I'm done.
So when I got sent back and everything, mm-hmm. I'd say March 2013 is when everything kind of just, I felt, like I said, like my career was ending. I was feeling the full weight of everything.
Sure.
And that's when I had, I guess, like basically a mental break. There was this nurse, and I don't know if she'll listen to this podcast, and I hope she doesn't think that I'm speaking ill of her, but she was nice, but sure. She lost her son, and her son was like 7 years old.
Sure.
And that's a horrible thing.
Of course.
I couldn't imagine.
Can't imagine, yeah.
But just like I think the same time she couldn't imagine some of the things that I went through, she put herself in a place one day where I was having a rough time thinking about basically like the anniversary of somebody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she said, it's been how many years? Can't you just get over it? And I was pretty upset. Like I was already in a rough spot that day. Yeah, I wasn't feeling that great. My career, like I'm getting kicked out of the military. I'm thinking of like, oh crap, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
And here comes this lady with her opinion that I didn't even ask for.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but let me say something though. It's funny though, because in years of working with families and everything, we've walked through tragic situations with people, and that tends to be the kind of advice people give. I'll never forget this about 10 years ago. Yeah, just get over it. Like, but it's not, nobody gives that advice, even though it sounds so crass and everything. They don't give that advice trying to be, you know, rude or lacking sympathy or something like that. Usually it's
what they told themselves.
It's what somebody told them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, projecting
Right. Because mm-hmm. that's a sign of strength. You just got to pick yourself up and keep going. I heard that literally. I'll never forget this. I heard a family that lost a dad. Dad was 42 years old, I think. 6 weeks from diagnosis to death with a brain tumor. 5 kids, right? He's gone. 2 weeks after he's gone, I'm watching someone counsel his wife and say that very thing. Well, you're just going to have to be strong. You're going to have to whatever. Are you kidding me? Her whole world.
Yeah.
I mean, her whole world with this guy was cut short by one half, essentially. She doesn't have a dad for her kids. Her husband's gone. I mean,
yeah, but she's supposed to just get over it.
Right, right. And nobody was trying to be insensitive. It was just one of those, like, I mean, there is a truth to it. You have to pick yourself up. But at the same time, we don't know how to grieve, I think, as human beings anymore, if we ever did. And there is a legitimate grieving process. And you guys don't get to do that because you're going to these funerals half the time and then you're deployed the next week or something or right back into the throw of things. So, you know, it's just it's a complete disaster. And I can understand why. I assume that woman, having lost her son, heard that same kind of stuff.
I'm sure.
And eventually bought into that lie.
Yeah.
And then you become, and however many others that she was probably treating as well, become the recipients of, you know, that wonderful, great advice too, right?
So if she ever hears this podcast, she needs to come visit us.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and have a session compassion about RTM.
Yeah,
I ended up apologizing to her, actually, because what happened after she said that is I grabbed a pair of scissors off the reception desk and said, get out of my face before I stab you in the throat with these scissors.
Oh my gosh.
And
how'd that work for you?
She went and filed a report on me mm-hmm. because this is a civilian nurse. And even mm-hmm. though she works in a military hospital,
yeah.
I'm sure a guy in uniform holding a large, I mean, these were, you know, the large scissors telling her that I'm going to stab you was scary to her. And because of that, you know, homicidal intentions, I had to go see mental health.
Sure.
So when I went and saw mental health, basically, that's when everything just spiraled down. They actually ended up sending me inpatient to a local facility there mm-hmm. in Lawton. And the people at that local facility said, we're not equipped. We need to send you to Colorado Springs.
How does that feel? Like, we're not equipped for your mental illness.
I hadn't thought about that. That's a very interesting.
When you just got really angry at somebody because you're grieving, and somebody said something stupid and you reacted.
Jeez.
But at that point, if I'm being honest about how I was, like, I was spiraling pretty bad. Like, I set up a mat I set up a mat, you know, those gymnastic mats. Mm-hmm. I put that on the wall in the inpatient facility that I was at, and I was punching it till my knuckles were bleeding just because I was just so, like, anxious and worked up, and now I feel trapped. I'm not allowed to leave. I'm in this place, and I was hating it. And so they were like, you got to go somewhere else. So I went from what was supposed to be a 72-hour inpatient facility to what ended up being a six-week inpatient lockdown facility, and it was strictly for vets.
And that's trauma in and of itself, quite frankly, for most people being in any kind of inpatient.
It was definitely different.
Mental health.
Yeah, I mean, scary. I guess I got to say the nice thing is I wasn't around like somebody that's got dissociative identity disorder that's like sitting there rocking over in a corner or anything like that. Like, now I'm just around veterans that's good. Yeah, so I mean, like, which is where I was at with the other facility. I mean, I was just in with general people. Yeah. So this other facility was strictly for, they had a veteran program, really nice staff.
I want to ask you something real quick on that. That first facility where you're not just with, I mean, you're with civilians too, you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Why is that standard treatment protocol, like within the armed services to do that?
Well, as far as I know, there are mental health facilities on every base.
Sure.
But I don't think they're equipped for inpatient. I think they are an outpatient base only. Okay. So when anything goes inpatient mental health, they send out, basically.
Okay, so first step is they send out, and that could be at a facility that has civilians there.
If you're fortunate to be at a nice base that's like maybe in a major city, you might get a really nice inpatient facility right outside a base.
Sure.
But I was in Lawton, Oklahoma, and that's, I don't know if you know, right below
the cradle of civilization,
it's
right below the taint
of the United States. So it's a horrible place. You hear artillery blowing up and meth houses blowing up at the same time is the ongoing joke there.
To the people of Lawton, if you're listening, our apologies for everything. Yeah, I'm sure it's a great place.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place.
They got
place.
Internet last week, apparently, and a Golden Corral. So yes.
So in Lawton, Oklahoma, it was starting to grow right as I left, but it was not that great. So they sent me to a more major city, which is Colorado Springs.
Got it.
And there, that was actually, you know, if you know Colorado Springs, Fort Carson is in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. So that they had a great mental health facility right outside their base.
Sure.
So that's where I got sent.
Okay.
And I was there with veterans with active duty military guys from all over the United States that were doing the same program I was doing, which was group therapy, exposure therapy, and EMDR.
Sure.
And it was just, I mean, when we got there, we got given like a stack of like 10 books. All like, you know, walking in footsteps of war, shadows of war, all these self-help books on like, oh, this is not, oh, the, I was told to read On Killing. Have you ever read that book? It's written by a retired lieutenant colonel, and he talks about the effects of killing at all levels. I mean, like from everything, like how hand-to-hand combat affects you differently versus looking through a sniper rifle. I had to read that book and write a whole thing. So it was definitely the EMDR therapy. Wow. I would say was not my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. I've heard it helps a lot of people, but then I've heard other therapists and I've heard psychologists say that they might look at EMDR therapy how we look at electroshock therapy now in 10 years, that it's more damaging than it is helpful.
Hmm.
I feel that, and Carrie can, like, just even thinking about sitting there and doing rapid eye movement or following a light while trying to talk about a traumatic incident gives me anxiety.
Sure, sure.
Because I was doing it 2 to 3 times a week while on like 17 different medications.
Well, and then what happened is when he first came to me, I was doing
art.
And which also uses eye movements, but it's different than EMDR. It is more progressive and does a little more.
But do this for the sake of clarity for those who might not understand, just in a nutshell, Carrie, talk about what is EMDR in the first place and that sort of thing.
EMDR is eye movement desensitization reprocessing.
Okay.
So they believe that there's different theories on it, but one of them is just, you know, when you're sleeping, you have REM sleep and your eyes are moving back and forth.
Rapid eye movement,
and they can simulate that and kind of simulate a dream state a little bit, and reprocess some of the memories and, mm-hmm. and recategorize them. The problem is with EMDR that we've seen is often, and by the right clinician, EMDR can work mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. for some people. I'm not going to discount that. It definitely sure. does. I mean, there's people that say, you know, absolutely EMDR saved me. Mm. However, there's not a standard of this is always how you do EMDR every single time. So sure. The clinician has to really have some insight and work with some of her own resource or his own resources.
That's fair. Okay.
And so what happens is often they get, that's great. Now we're going to access this memory mm-hmm. and it's left open. And so now I've had somebody come in and she couldn't drive because she had EMDR, and she came in and couldn't drive because she got triggered from this memory and literally had to stop on the side of the road, have someone come pick her up, pick
sure.
her car up.
Sure.
And they found me and we did some other therapy and she was okay. Mm. But it was, you know, just, so that's what happens. It just, wow. it can be okay, but yeah. it also can activate memories that we, and then not do anything with them.
Okay.
Maybe it would have helped me more if somebody told me, another counselor told me originally that they would have never even thought to do EMDR with me with the amount of medication that I was on, because mm-hmm. I was on 6 milligrams of Haldol, 220 milligrams of propranolol, 120 milligrams of Buspar. What's the one for Minipress for nightmares? Mm-hmm. I was just on all sorts.
Yeah, there's
I'm hearing anti-anxiety medications there, sleep deprivation medications. I mean, you got it all.
Propranolol. I mean, when I went and saw a civilian doctor, yeah. and he said you were on 240 milligrams. He's like, how did you stand? He's
yeah,
like,
that's
how did,
crazy. Because
how did you not bottom
they
out?
They use 40 milligrams of propranolol to work with like anxieties like before 40
but milligrams, that's a high,
that's
thing
kind of
isn't it
yeah,
usually
yeah.
like 10 or 20 or something yeah, yeah. like that would be like more moderate.
I was taking 220 milligrams a day and with 6 milligrams of Haldol, which Haldol I felt the worst on, like I noticed the second they started giving me Haldol in the hospital, I was like, wow, what the heck is this?
And complicate things. You got all these interacting with each other, so side yeah. effects overlapping different. I mean,
you sit in group therapies and you're listening to other people's trauma. Then and when I was there in 2013, the exposure therapy is not the level that it was here at UCF or anything, but it was a virtual reality mask. You sat in a chair,
sure,
a little plastic M16, and there was like a smell box in front of you, mm-hmm. and she had a whole little like box full of these vials that she put sure, these powders sure, in. And sure. so that was the level of exposure. And that was,
and they smelled like what? Trash and
there's like
burning
trash,
flesh
burning
and
hair. They did burning hair. I asked that question. Hair. I'm like, do you guys have burning flesh in there? And she's like, no, we don't do that one. It's burning hair, which is kind of like, if you're smelling burning flesh, you probably smell burned hair too. Wow. So, I mean,
So this is what you're having to do. You're good. This is what we talked about in the previous things, you know,
prolonged exposure. Yeah.
This is what he was doing. Prolonged exposure. I mean, would any of us?
Well, so Carrie, you're the clinician here. I mean, I don't understand the science behind that. There's something that just, how would that even make, how would that work? I mean, it just doesn't seem
you
like
become
it.
Numb to it, right?
That's the goal. The theory is if, okay. if you do it long enough, yeah. it's going to become, you're become numb to it. It's the same reason why they started out.
But I mean,
having
the quality of life that you get after that, you're numb to that, but are you not numb to life in general? I mean, what do you still feel? I mean, that's the question.
It's almost like the same technique that they do when they're, when they're training like CIA operatives to be like, I mean, if you
machines,
just,
yeah, right?
just I mean, do just the same action of killing somebody over and over and over again, eventually the killing isn't going to bother you. If you're just, you know, if you're, so
don't get me wrong. Cause I love, you know, I still will watch reruns of shows like 24 and everything. Yeah. And you see Jack Bauer out there and he's clearly one of these guys that, you know, when you can be sitting in an interrogation room and take a pencil and stab someone in the throat, like you apparently do not have sensitivity to, you know, there's no human empathy anymore.
No.
And so that's awesome. It makes for great entertainment.
Yeah.
But you know, there's
a
normal reaction to that show. And I probably would know if I've watched too many episodes in a row when it doesn't faze me anymore. Like, cause I should have a cringe when that happens. I should turn my eyes and go, oh my gosh, you know, like, and that would be a normal human reaction. So you're telling me basically they're trying to expose you in a way that you don't even feel that stuff anymore. It doesn't faze you.
I mean, UCF is even more immersive than that. They have a headset that it connects the cables and you're walking around a room and they have smells and sounds and all. I believe they're like,
don't say this. There's some video gamers out there that are going, hey, can we get signed up for that?
You know, you were invited to go to the
matter of fact, I wasn't just invited. They called after I talked to the intro nurse on the phone or whatever, the screening nurse.
Yeah.
The doctor was calling me every single day for 2 weeks trying to, and leaving messages, but he was calling at like times like lunchtime and dinner. And I was like, I'm like, dude, you're calling at like the most inopportune times. And then I basically, once I found out, cause somebody told me about this, was like, hey, is there any, cause I just posted in a Facebook group asking, hey, is there any alternative counseling's out there that's free to vets that is outside the VA?
Sure.
And somebody's like, oh, UCF. And so when I applied and then I did some more research, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that.
No.
So, I mean, again, can't discount it because it does work for some people.
Well, but they less than 20%. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure that the UCF stats are higher than that right now because they're going to.
But the point is, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, they're doing a technique that at least has apparently some effectiveness, small percentage, because there were no alternatives. Yeah?
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. So you're here, and you're able to talk about these stories now, and there's a reason for that.
Yes.
Why don't we segue into that?
Okay.
All right. So what happened what's been going on in your life in recent weeks? Tell me about your interaction with Carrie. RTM, all of that stuff.
And I'll pick up. So okay. Brian is really honest, right? Brian, when I... 4 years ago, I think it was 2014. So it was right when you came back. He came in and we tried some, you know, other therapy and it had eye movements with it. And he literally was he was my first failure in this other therapy. And I was really like, oh no. He started sweating. He was wearing a sleeveless shirt. His muscles were literally like vibrating. He wasn't flexing. And I remember thinking to myself, this is not going well. And he looked at me and kind of spouted off, you don't understand what I've been through. And then went, D-d-d-d-d-d. And I was like, okay, I hear you. We're not going to do this today.
She put the scissors in the drawer, slowly walked away. So we got to help this guy a different way. you know, I'm messing with you on that.
Because
of the good place that you're in right now.
He was polite, but his eyes were blazing with just anger. Like, I cannot believe.
And I was not a fan of you. Because I think, I'll be honest, like she said, I'm incredibly honest. I told her, like, I think this is a bad idea. I don't like eye movement. I think that this is going to make me feel worse.
Wow.
And she was like, no, this isn't like that. It's, you know, because it's supposed to be different.
Sure.
But I just think because of the level of amount that I had been exposed to. And like I said, the medication that I was on while I was doing it, I just did not.
Were you still on the medication that day when you were first doing that?
Before I got out of the army, I took all the pills and I said, I can't take these. I'm having my ex-wife now, she came home one time before I got out and saw me. I was literally like just staring at my daughter crying in the high chair because I was just
doped up. He's a really responsive dad.
And I didn't want to be that. I said, I'd rather struggle every day than have medication that I'm just like, you know, zombified, which is what that medication was. It was like, okay, we can't make him better, so just make him nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and I'm 31 years old, and I'm so far from being nothing.
Yeah.
But that's what those medications make you.
Yeah.
They make you nothing. They make you to where you can't function.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it wasn't working. So we came in. You know, we're trying to, and it was like, okay, this is obviously not working.
Yeah.
And I can admit, you know, defeat. Like, okay, this isn't working. We met a few times and talked but at that point he went to another therapist and I think you got some relief a little bit, you know, so he got some relief working with a different therapist that worked with another.
I was just doing straight counseling. It was just a licensed counselor I was seeing and I was just talking, you know, wasn't even.
Which has a place. There's no question for it. It has a place.
But, so honestly, you know, it just sort of, I was chalked up to one of my, I couldn't help him, you know, I couldn't help him. And so I didn't.
Hey, Life After PTSD listeners. We're glad that you love other stories of healing, but what about you? First Orlando Counseling is the premier trauma therapy center in Central Florida with a full staff of trained clinicians ready to help you clear your trauma without re-traumatization. Childhood abuse, relationship abuse, a traumatic car accident, birth trauma, first responder or military trauma, even phobias. You don't have to live like this. It's time for you to heal. Schedule a consultation today by visiting firstorlandocounseling.com or call 407-514-4470. It's that easy.
But fast forward to just a few months ago in September when I went into this RTM training, the reconsolidation of traumatic memories training, I thought, yeah, I wonder if this would work for Brian. Because in my mind, like, it was really painful as a therapist to watch. I mean, you go into this wanting to help people. I mean, you know, you do therapy.
Yeah. No.
The thrill is to help somebody, not to...
It's why you do it. You bear a lot of burdens of people, but you get to see the other side of it too.
Right, so I get that. And so I'm okay seeing the negative, but there was no way we were going to get to the positive with him that day. And so, you know, it plagued, you think about it, you're like, wow, you don't want that to ever happen to anybody else. You don't want to ever put someone in more pain than they need to be in. And so when I watched Dan, of course, Dan was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, I wonder if Brian can do this. So I literally picked up the phone and said, hey, would you come try something? Because I know you'll tell me if it doesn't work.
But he had blocked your number.
She was actually so excited about it. She messaged me like a month and a half too soon before she was able to.
Yeah, I think I did. I was like, hey. And then I didn't have time.
Yeah, then like 45 days later, she's like, oh, yeah, I totally.
That's such a Carrie thing.
Yeah, though. I totally like went away for 45 days before after I messaged
you. That's what happened.
She's like, hey, I want to talk to you. Can you come into the office? Really cool, important stuff. And then silence.
Schedule you for October. What year? No, 2019.
It was. Yeah, it's because I wanted to, honestly, I wanted to make sure I knew exactly what I was doing.
I get that.
And so I went to, you know, some additional training. And yeah, I was like, I really do want to talk to you. I'm so sorry. So he finally said, whatever. I guess I'll come in.
And I was hesitant.
Oh, yeah. You're like,
but I mean, at that point, so you still have nothing to lose, I guess, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
The only reason why I came in is because I'm in a much better place than I was 4 years ago anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, therapy or no therapy, I think if you're someone that wants to improve and get better, you do get better. Yeah. So it's just not, are you your 100% potential? Probably not, but...
But then still the lurking thought, I gotta think. I mean, you think about this, like how many people, because I've dealt with anxiety at various times over the years and everything, and you always find that person that gets help somewhere, and then they make it their mission to tell you. And so you know the ups and downs of like, all right, I'll try this one more person, and they're like, it's like a reinjection of hope for a second, and then the letdown that comes thereafter, that's not a good place to live either. But people live in that high and low and everything. So there's probably, it doesn't matter what the therapy is or what, you know, somebody calls you up, you're still probably going to try it eventually. You might go kicking and screaming because you know what, like I need my life to change. I need it to be better.
And so in your life, you know, he was in a much better place when he came in, you know, a few weeks ago, but at the same time, he was still having some flashbacks. He was still having some nightmares. Mm-hmm. He was waking up at 3:30 in the morning, I think every day or four.
Yeah, 4:30 was late. When I had come in to see you, I think for like 4 months, I've been waking up straight for like 3:30. That was the first improvement I noticed was my driving. I don't know how to explain because anybody that's been in a car with me, my mom, my fiance, my ex-wife, they can all vouch for the fact that I am so aggressive and amped up and like road rage to the max when I'm driving. Sure. And I don't start that way. It's just the second somebody cuts me off.
Yeah, something triggers you. I get it, man.
I become. So it's nice. Wow. And I also find myself where I check my mirrors constantly. Sure. And I just notice maybe about 2 weeks after maybe doing like, 10 hours worth of...
It wasn't... No, actually you, at that point you had done four.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. 4 hours, two-hour sessions.
And I immediately started noticing that I'm like, oh, I just got from, I think I know how I noticed is like, I just got from point A to point B singing songs and listening to my radio, and I don't even remember the drive. Like, I don't remember cars cutting me off. I wasn't looking in my mirror. I'm like, what the hell just happened? You know, so it's like,
he texted me, I just drove and listened to music. And he said, and then he texted me, he goes, that sounds really weird, I know, but thank you.
Like, congratulations.
He's like,
it's a big deal for me to enjoy a commute, you know? Yeah. I mean, then I texted her a week later, and I'm like, hey, I just took a nap in the middle of the day. That was another milestone.
And this is
for
just
me.
One session of RTM at this point? We have
done five sessions.
Done five. Yeah, but at that point, how many have you done?
At that point, we had done two full sessions. Yes.
When I started being able to take naps, probably two full sessions.
Two full sessions.
Wow. And, you know, that's like, I woke up at 4:30 that morning, but I woke up like because I think my stomach was upset. But then, like a normal person who got up too early, I was able to take a nap later on that day when my daughter was. I was like, "Wow, okay," you know. And usually I'm so when I'm up for the day. I'm alert. I'm on guard.
I'm
on edge. And then I don't go to sleep until I'm exhausted from being that way all day.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So tell me this. You've had five sessions now.
Maybe six.
Six, whatever it is. You've had more than two.
Yeah,
that's
yeah, right. Yeah.
How has this affected you as a dad now? Like, have you seen any benefit there in terms of your interaction with your daughter and all that?
I'd say I'm definitely less quick to anger, which is something I actively improve on. I told myself about a year ago, it was like, okay, I'm just going to stop yelling at my daughter.
Sure.
Because I don't want, like, if I yell, then I get, like, myself gets worked up.
And let me just say, he's a really good dad. I mean, I do know that.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, he is that dad. Like, I mean, the other day he couldn't come to do the podcast because he was, she ended up being sick, but he was supposed to go do crafts, you know, Christmas crafts.
Love it.
You know,
love it.
With a bunch of little
And that's
kids.
A good excuse. That's always a good excuse right there. I love that. That's great. Yeah.
So he's really actively involved already with his daughter.
Right.
So getting angry or getting, you know, that's already really upsetting.
Yeah,
you know,
I just didn't. Yeah.
No, I asked that question because I think that one of the gifts of RTM that maybe we should never overlook is it's not just you getting your life back. It's others who love you getting their life with you back. Right. Yeah. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And that to me is worth celebrating there because you're not the only one that goes through the struggles and everything. I think that's if anything, that ought to be one of the messages that we are screaming from the rooftops every time we do an episode of this show is to make people aware of how many facets your struggles, the guys who are in uniform and anybody struggling with PTSD, how many areas that actually touches. It's more than just them. Okay. It's not a contained, you know, self-contained problem and everything. So we love seeing the benefits to others as well, you know, when there's therapy and treatment. So,
and actually, I'm just processing, you've actually only had four actual sessions of RTM because you did come in. We came in, but we talked about some things. It wasn't actual RTM because I think we were both still so shocked. I was still like, okay. And I'd done this with some other people now too. Mm-hmm. I just know Brian is going to be really honest and tell me like it is. Like,
I told her before we started that if it didn't work, I was gonna tell her to her face that it didn't work.
Yeah, it wasn't a problem before to tell me.
Okay,
to my face.
I want to see with me as the witness here. I want you to look her in the eyes and tell her if it worked or not. Yeah. Did it work?
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Cool.
No, he's.
I messaged her saying thank you for. I mean, she knows that I really appreciate her bringing me back.
Sure. So tell me this real quick. What are you looking forward to as you continue to progress? Like, what's something you're hopeful for in terms of regaining, you know, more of the normalcy of your life, or creating that new normal?
Is going back to school.
Yeah, I'm going back to school in the spring.
Awesome.
I'm not where 100% like where I can work yet, but I feel like I'm ready to go back to work where I want to work towards that goal.
Sure.
I think that's my goal is to get to a place where I can help others. I was the whole reason why I became a medic is because I'm definitely, as I've found out, you know, like I became a medic because I thought like, oh, this is how I'm going to like save lives and help out my buddies. But like, I'm a caring person.
And
I think occupational therapy is something I'm pursuing now. So I definitely want to continue to help people. And I think that's what I'm working towards.
And
now.
Talk to me too about what we were talking right before we went live. Is you one reason you're on this doing this today is because of the suicides that of people, and you know, you were talking about that. Just mention that because I know we've kind of focused on that in some other.
Well, I mean, we just had previous. What 4 days ago we had a Marine colonel kill himself at the Tampa Bay,
the VA. Yeah.
We were he was in my office, he's the one that told me about that.
And you know, he got in full dress uniform, sat on his medical records and shot himself in the parking lot. He's the fifth veteran to do that at that facility alone since 2013.
Wow.
I mean, there's been other stories. Like back in 2014, there was a guy in Kansas that went to the VA and said, I feel like I'm going to hurt myself or others. I need help. And they looked at him and said, we can see you in 3 weeks. And he walked out. And he got his gun, and he went and waved around on his lawn, and it was suicide by cop.
Mm.
I mean, he basically got the cops to shoot him. So it's like, one, VA reform is a whole other subject, but the amount of suicides the amount of suicides that happen is crazy. I mean, we have 88 suicides in this country on average a day.
Sure.
And 22 of those are veterans. And they say that number is even low. And it's 1 to 2 of those are veterans from, I guess my generation is what you call it, vets from this war.
Mm-hmm.
So every day it's one, one of my people, you know, kills themselves. Yep. And we got basically 20 Vietnam vets killing themselves every day.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of the older vets don't realize, that it is a lot of the old, they just think it's a lot of the younger ones. But when these younger ones come out, what you were saying, you know,
I think what we're going to have happen here is, as this war draws to a close, I mean, just Trump just announced today that he's planning on privatizing this war. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be Blackwater moving into Afghanistan.
Oh, great.
He's pulling out 7,000 troops, and he's sending in a contracting company.
Well, I saw he was doing that with Syria, I think, the other day, too, with pulling out of there and letting Afghanistan Russia and those guys fight.
So we'll have just as many people with PTSD, but they'll be able to afford the treatment because they'll be getting $150,000 contracts.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I think as this war ends and all of a sudden you see what's now the longest war running in America's history comes to a close, and all these veterans that are now 20-year veterans, okay, because, like, we've been at war for 10-plus years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when these guys that joined in 2001, and here we hit 2021, and they hit their 20 years and they're eligible for retirement, you're going to see an influx, I think, of suicides. Because now all these people that have just stayed in because they've deployed 5-6 times, and that's all they know.
Sure.
They're out, and they have nothing to do other than possibly be a cop.
Sure.
If they pass the psych test, which we're told that, hey, you know what? You're going to have a great job when you get out as a law enforcement or FBI or ATF. But what they don't tell you is that the psychological tests for those things are all pretty rigorous.
Yeah,
and most military guys don't make it through.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's you know, you get these hopes of, like, having something to do when you get out. And then when you get out, you realize, like, man, I'm doing nothing compared to what I used to. And as I said earlier on, when the music stops, it's just like that's when you're going to be focusing on those five deployments.
Yeah.
And that's and that's why you were willing to come on and talk about this today, because we see that the RTM protocol could help people. Imagine, imagine if we could take all of those guys that are coming back, and we had enough therapists trained that it was just an automatic, it was just a procedure. It was a neurological intervention that happened just like you do a debriefing. Like, it's part of the debriefing. You do debriefing, you do a couple, because honestly, after two sessions, you felt dramatically better. We've kind of just tweaked some things after that. But, you know, you do a couple sessions of this. Can you imagine the lives that would change of families and children and wives and friends and, you know, that's what my hope is.
Yeah.
That could happen.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that's a great wrapping up point. Brian, I want to thank you just for being willing to share some of those things. It's a testimony to RTM, like, that you're able to share the stories that you've shared today. I mean, just the fact that you've worked with him, Carrie, and that you know what would have been sort of the do not enter zone, you know, in just recent weeks and everything. It's very, very cool to see that. But thanks for sharing, because the hope of this is to share these stories with people out there who are, you know, we want to beat down the door of those who are sort of in the prison of their own messes and everything, going, well, that could never help me. That could never help me. They start hearing hundreds of stories of guys that are actually getting help and women that are getting help. You know, at some point that becomes too much to ignore. And we don't want to see those people become the next statistic. And if nothing is done, there's no reason to believe that they won't. And so that's why we're here.
Brian's a perfect example of somebody who literally has tried every other type of therapy that there is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know that there's anything you haven't tried.
I was gonna try electroshock. That was next, right? Just go numb. Just zap my brain.
Well, we can go shock him in the other room. We have something we can hook him up to. See that outlet over there?
And just stick a fork in the electrical outlet, right?
I don't know if it's gonna help you a whole lot, but it's a wild ride for a couple seconds.
And there was no shock in the RTM.
No, that's one thing maybe I should mention. With every therapy, I noticed when I left, I always felt worse than when I went in. And the explanation for that is like, oh, that's part of the process. It's part of the process. You got to, everything's worse before better.
Oh, this is awful.
This was the first therapy where it was like, I didn't leave here feeling, I just felt like, almost like it hadn't even happened.
Is
the best way to describe it.
So good. Then the final,
a little bit hopeful.
Yeah. The final plug, then you get to do it. What would you say to the guy that's sitting out there that was you a year ago?
I'd say exactly what I'd say to my buddy that I just texted, which is, you know, if you're thinking that, oh, you don't want to bring these demons back up, or you don't want to, you know, deal with that right now, you're always going to have an excuse.
Yeah.
You're always going to have something that's going on in your life that you feel like you can't put yourself and your health as a priority, and you're going to regret it if you don't down the road. And I'd say that if you give this therapy a shot, you realize that you're not reliving your demons or anything. You're not like, it's not facing demons. It's completely different. And it's hard to knock down some of those barriers of like what therapy we understand, but it's completely different.
Thanks for joining us for Life After PTSD. As you listen to this podcast, imagine your new life and all the possibilities when you are free of PTSD, because that is what is possible with RTM. You are here, which means you're ready. So connect with us at lifeafterptsd.org or in Canada, lifeafterptsd.ca, or follow us at Heal Your PTSD.